sermon, and we'll try and do grace in 2 weeks. I may get to it. So something was on my mind. Something's always on my mind. There's a story I want to share with you. I was told it was true, but then I don't trust the internet. The internet tells me that everything on the internet is true, but it's the internet that tells you that everything on the internet is true. So who do you trust? But I was told this was a true story, and I can see that it happens. I mean, it's not a major story. Two boys had climbed up a tree. They were about 6 years old, and they were helping each other climb up. Have you ever climbed up a tree with no plan of getting down? I've climbed up high enough where there's a problem coming down. And they found themselves too high. The lowest branch was too high to get off the tree. They were stuck. And they were looking around, and they were getting afraid. Soon one of the dads came by. "Hey, what you doing up there?" "Well, we're kind of stuck, Dad." And he calls his son's name. He says, "Jump." And the son just goes, "Wee!" Jumps into his dad's arms and puts him down. And he goes to his friend, "Jump." "Jump." Had to go get a ladder. Why did the first son jump? Because Dad commanded you jump. And you just jump because Dad commanded. Trusted him. There was that relationship that he had. He didn't jump just because he was taught to obey. He jumped because he learned trust in a relationship with Dad. He had experiences with Dad, that Dad always had his best, always cared for him, always helped for him, always had help for him. And he just leaped. "That's my dad. I just have trust." I had a similar experience. One of my joys was that I got to teach my girls how to swim. I couldn't teach them how to ride a bike. No, I had two small bicycles, and they were small wheeled, and I put them in the garage, and I said, "I'm going to get home, I'm going to teach them how to ride bikes." I open up the garage door, and there they are doing donuts. "Hey, Dad, look, we know how to ride a bike." So I didn't get a chance to teach them how to ride a bike, but taught them how to swim. And in a very short time, at one point I had them stand on the edge of the pool, and I stood in the water and I said, "Jump." And here comes Tim, right on top of me. And Tracy followed right after her. "Trust Dad. Dad's got you back." I said, "Jump," and they did. Not because I commanded that they jump, and they listened and obeyed everything I said, because and we're not going to get into that. Listening and obeying immediately. They trusted me to catch them, to hold them, to protect them. We had experience where we learned trust. I would put them on my back, and I said, "Hang on to my neck." And I swam out over my head. And I said, "Okay, are you comfortable?" "Yes, Dad." "Okay, I'm going to go under. And when you when you're uncomfortable, pull on my neck, we'll go back up." Okay, so I went under, and I was immediately being strangled. But by the end of that first hour, 1 hour in the water, we were going from one side of the pool to the other side of the pool underwater. They trusted me. They trusted their dad. They learned to trust through the experiences and the words and the care that I showed, so that what could be potentially life-threatening, they just trusted me. I'll just jump to you, Dad. The kid out of the tree, "I just jumped to you, Dad." Have we learned, this is the question for us today, have we learned to trust God in our situations in that same way? In every situation of life, does God come first? Do we have that relationship where that relationship says, whatever God says, I trust him. Not just because he commands me, but because we have a relationship, because we have had experiences with God. And we've read of other people's experiences. It's huge. The world we live in can be quite unsettling and worrisome. And we do get fears and doubts, and those fears and doubts can easily distract us. Do we trust God? It's a question we need to answer for ourselves. Do we trust God today? Do we see God as our guide? Do we see God as our protector, our sustainer, our healer, our hope, our salvation? Or do the concerns of today overshadow our faith? God is our guide. I have a guide. It's called the GPS. I have yet to fully trust it, even though it's pure technology and the wisdom of some great minds put it together. I still argue with it. I have directional dyslexia. I recognize that. And while I can drive well, I'm a good driver, I get lost. And my other half will happily confirm that. I get lost a lot. Okay. Lived in San Jose, 44 years? And I still get in the car. We're going someplace, and I turn to Sue. 44 years, where am I going? And she'll tell me where to go. A lot of people tell me where to go, but that's another story. So I trust Sue. I don't trust the GPS. I look for my guide. And for the most part, GPS works out okay. But it's also not my protector. God is our guide, our protector. What about sustaining us? Going through the difficulties and trials we may go through, He sustains us. He is a healer. He gives us hope. He shows us salvation. Do we trust God in all situations? Israel, back in the day, had experiences to help teach them trust in God. We're going into the days of unleavened bread, and we'll go through things like the Passover and the Exodus. Well, let's go to Exodus 13. And look at some of the experiences that they had that God used to teach them to trust Him. Here we have a group of people after hundreds of years are going to be leaving their comfort zone. If you want to think of being a slave in Egypt as a comfort zone. Having had no real relationship with God, no reason to trust Moses, except that, 10 plagues through Moses' mouth. We're leaving. We're out of here. Exodus 13. Helps if I was on 13. Exodus 13, verse 3. And Moses said to the people, "Remember this day in which you went out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, from the strength of the hand the Lord brought you out of this place. No unleavened bread shall be eaten." These are on the days of unleavened bread. And on this day you are going out in the month of Abib. Says to remember it. Have you had experiences that help you trust God and then shared with your family? These experiences are to be remembered. Brought to mind when other experiences come up, when other trials and difficulties come up. You can recall how God intervened and how God spared you and how God guided you and protected you and sustained you, gave you hope and salvation. Moses said to the people, "Remember this day in which you went out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by the strength of hand the Lord brought you out of this place." Verse 14. "So shall it be when your son asks you in time to come, saying, 'What is this? What are we doing? Why are we doing this?' That you shall say to him, to her, to your daughter, your sons, your grandkids, 'By strength of hand, the Lord brought us out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. We were rescued by God in a time of trouble when we needed His help.'" It's huge, or huge, depending on, never mind. Verse 17. "Then it shall come to pass, when Pharaoh had let the people go, going into one of the examples now. They were to remember what took place, and then they were to tell and share it with their family. Now let's see what God did. For want of a better term, God's got your back. How's that? God's got your back. Verse 17, then it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. Hey, there's a good path to go. No, I want you to go this way. I want you to go in a more difficult way. Oh, that was near, for God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. They went through the Philistines. They were going to have to fight their way out immediately. So God led the people around by the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. And the children of Israel went up in orderly ranks out of the land of Egypt. They marched off. But where did God lead them? And he led them with a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. I mean, it was very visible that their God was there on a daily basis, 24/7. You could not miss the fact that God was leading. Chapter 14. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, that they turn and camp before my mouth is not working today. Yeah, that place, between Migdol and the sea, opposite Baal Zephon, you shall camp there by the sea. Huh. We're going to camp there by the sea. Can't go forward. Can't go to the sides because you've got mountains on both sides. And what happens next? For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are bewildered by the land. The wilderness has closed them in. Then I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will pursue them. And I, God, will gain honor over Pharaoh and over all his army that the Egyptians may know. Israel should know. They're told to remember what's taking place. But that the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. And they did so. God led them to a place where God, only God, could rescue them so that they learned to trust God. We go through a lot of experiences in our life and we learn to trust God. We see God's hand in so many things. When I was at college, we used to have, they said, have a journal of blessings. And the list in the journal pointed out so many times God intervened. Whether I asked for it or not, we saw God's hand in our lives on a daily basis. Now it was told the king of Egypt, verse 5, that the people had fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants had turned against the people. Why have we done this? Why have we let Israel go from serving us? Are we out of our minds? So he made ready his chariot and told his people and put his army together, and off they went. They went to challenge Israel. Verse 10. And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Unless God showed a rescue, Israel was done. They would be recaptured, if not slaughtered. Then they said to Moses, verse 11, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Of course, they're pointing to Moses as if Moses did it, as if Moses did the miracles of the 10 plagues. Is this not the word, verse 12, is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. Their view of life was only physical. They did not see the power of God. They did not have a relationship with God. They had not learned to trust yet. And what God was doing, they were going to go through a series of experiences to learn to trust God on a daily basis. What bigger way than to rescue them from the army of Egypt? Moses had a perspective of life. Moses, being a friend of God, understood so much more. Verse 13, and Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. For the Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace." Learn to trust God in a most desperate situation. Learn to trust God. And they did. The situation was brought about. They walked through dry land when the Red Sea opened up. And I had an instructor in history tried to tell me that, it was just low tide, that they walked through on low tide. Well, you have 3, 4, or 5 million people walking on low tide on wet ground. It's going to be a mud bath. But that's not consistent with what Scripture says here. Verse 22, so the children of Israel went in the midst of the sea on the dry ground. So it was hard enough for all the oxen and all the cattle and all the sheep and all the people marching through. So it wasn't a mud bath. And the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. This isn't low tide. They saw God's answer. They were beginning to trust God to be God. And I marvel at the idea of a wall of water on either side. And when after they passed through, the Egyptians chased, and there were no more Egyptians. They were overcome by the water. Verse 30, so the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. They began to have experiences that helped them trust God. God is real. He is not an ethereal thing that, you just need peace in your heart, love in your heart. Our God is real. And we need to have a real relationship with him. And we need to learn to trust him. Now, move 3 days from thence. 3 days, 72 hours. Having the cloud by day, the pillar of fire by night, still on a 24/7 basis, having seen the Egyptian army crumble in the Red Sea, where you should not have been able to walk on dry ground. 72 hours, 3 days. Exodus 15. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. No water. Now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. Hey, there is a pile of water. It's called bitter. Let's not drink it because it's bitter. And the people, 72 hours later, having just escaped from the Egyptian army. Verse 24, and the people complained against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" Murmur, murmur, murmur. So Moses cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. When he cast it into the waters were made sweet. Then he made a statue and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them. And said, "If you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God, and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep his statutes, I will put none of these diseases on you which I have brought on the Egyptians. For I am the Lord who heals you." He's giving promises for them to trust. When you look at your parents, and your parents said, "We're going to do this. I'm going to do this for you." As a child, don't you trust your parent to do that? That's why if you ever say something to your child, follow through, because you want them to trust you. Here, God begins promising and giving them experiences by which they learn to trust God. They learn to trust God. He led them into a trap and then led them out so that they experienced God's power, basically saying, I've got you back. I've got you back. You don't need to look at the army that's chasing you. I've got you back. Now, 3 days later, they're saying, woe is us, there's no water. Oh, no. All right. Here's a tree branch. Throw it in there, and the water became sweet. And I can't imagine the joy of having sweet-tasting water. It must have been a thrill to them. And it would last them a life. They'd learn to trust God, never murmur again, ever. Turn the page. Exodus 16. Woe is us. Verse 1. And they journeyed from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt. Not 72 hours, not 3 days. Now 30 days later. A month. Then the whole congregation of the children of Israel remembered God's promise, remembered him rescuing them, remembered him changing the water from bitter to sweet. No. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt. They still didn't trust God. They feared that God would kill them or allow them to die. When we sat at the pots of meal, and when we ate bread to our full. What fantasy is this? They were slaves in Egypt. For you have brought us into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Oh, woe is us. We're hungry. God was going to use this experience to help them learn to trust God now on a daily basis. Let's go forward. Then the Lord said to Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. And it shall come to pass, and it shall be on the sixth day, that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. A lot of times we use this to understand that God was teaching them about the Sabbath day, because for 6 days they had manna. That's what they saw this stuff. Well, I'll just read it. Yeah. Verse 15. So when the children of Israel saw it, verse 14, and when the layer of dew lifted there on the surface of the wilderness was a small round substance as fine as frost on the ground. So when the children of Israel saw it, they said to one another, what is it? For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, this is the bread from which the Lord has given you to eat. Manna just means, what is it? 6 days they would gather manna to make bread. And that sixth day was twice as much as the previous five, because they were not going to gather any on the seventh day. There was 7 days of miracles here. And on a daily basis, they went out to gather bread. And they couldn't make enough to go over to the next day, because if they did, what happened? It went sour. They couldn't eat it. They could only make enough for today, so that they learned to trust God on a daily basis. What does God say? Yeah, let's go there. Matthew 5, 6. Matthew 6. In the model prayer, he says, in this manner, after this manner, we're not to recite this, it's not by rote. This is a guide by which we have a relationship with God. He says, in this manner, therefore, pray, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done. Everything goes God first. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. First thing he says is, give us this day our daily bread. Back here, Israel was released from Egypt, and they were given their daily bread. They were learning to trust God on a daily basis. They would go out, and they would gather enough for their family, and they would mix it together, and they'd add water, and whatever they did, and then they'd bake it, and they'd have enough bread for the day. And And the next morning, they had to go back out and trust that God had provided more manna, or they'd go hungry. And they'd go out, and they would gather the manna, and they would mix it up just enough for their family, and bake it, and whatever. It had maybe, I have no idea what it tasted like. I like to think it was potatoes, but that's another story. And they made just enough for the family. And if they made too much, that which was, it had a shelf life of 24 hours. That which was only for the day was ruined. It only had 24-hour shelf life. They couldn't use it the next day. Every day they were learning to trust God. God would provide them food on a daily basis. I'm done with this. I'm done. You know, no more bread. Now, I hope God provides more in the morning. And the next day there's manna out there. And you gather it up and you do this thing over and over and over again. You do it for 40 years. You learn to trust God. God keeps his promises. You have a relationship with God. You go through some difficulties and trials, and you learn to trust God. And what God was saying right here, learn to trust me on a daily basis. Give us this day our daily bread. God said his word is food for us, and we should be reading this book on a daily basis. On a daily basis. I just exceeded my notes. We can ask the question, do we obey God because he commands us out of fear and dread? Or do we trust God to have our best interests in mind? Do we obey God because we know he knows what's best for us now, today, and on into tomorrow? When we trust and obey God, and we look to God in trust, we develop a deep, abiding relationship, one that grows in strength, and one that grows in encouragement, one that stands before fear and doubt. There are many times that God allows us to go through difficulties so that we learn trust, so that our relationship with him grows, so that it becomes very personal to have a relationship with God. There's a lot of stories in God's word. Let's go to Romans 15. Romans 15. There's a lot of stories in God's word that is written down specifically to help us grow in trust. 15 verse 4. Well, I'll just start in verse 1. Because it talks about our calling. We then, verse 15, chapter 15, verse 1. We then who are strong ought to bear with the scruples or weaknesses of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, leading to edification. Our calling isn't about us. We start out sometimes. Our calling is very personal. We're called by God by name. But our calling is also to be an example to the world around us. Verse 3, for even Christ did not please himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of those who reproached you fell on me. Verse 4, for whatever things were written before were written for our learning, that we through the patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope. We learn things by what is written. I like to read stories. I like to read anecdotes. I want to understand life around me. And if someone goes through an experience that I don't have to learn a lesson, I'm thrilled. I don't want to learn about cliffhanging or mountain climbing the wrong way. I'll just read about it. I don't need to climb a mountain. I get sweaty palms just thinking about it. These things were written before, those things which were written before were written for our learning, that we through the patience or the perseverance and comfort of the scriptures might have hope. 1 Corinthians 10, kind of a follow on to that same thought, 1 Corinthians 10 verse 11. This is usually where I go. All these things happened to them as examples, And they were written for our admonition, our education, our instruction, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. They went through so many things for our behalf. They went through difficulties for our behalf. And they were written down for us to learn from. Do we have examples of those individuals who have learned to trust God? You betcha. You betcha. Let's go to Daniel 1. Daniel 1. Daniel. Oh, Daniel, where'd you go, pal? Daniel 1. Daniel was a captive of Babylon. And as a young man, he was handpicked for government service. It was a very unique opportunity. Daniel 1, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, small g. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom was no blemish, but good looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. Verse 5, and the king appointed to them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. They were handpicked to go to college, and at graduation they went into civil service. Kind of like what we have today in our modern universities. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Azariah. And to them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name of Belshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, Anyway, we ended up with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You'll notice a lot of laughter from my wife. She likes it when I splot words. Now, there was an issue. They had the king's portion of food. You would think that that's great food. They would be honored to eat what the king eats. But Daniel purposed, verse 8, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now, God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. They had a good relationship. The chief of the eunuchs trusted Daniel, saw him for the character that he had. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink, for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are of your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king. Daniel's approach here was, I'm not going to defile myself with this bad stuff, basically unclean food, but I'm not going to shove it down your throat. Let's deal with this. Daniel said to the steward, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. He proposed a test. Let me show you God's way works. The God in whom I trust. And then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servant. So he consented with them in this manner and tested them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and wine and that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. As for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. They were given gifts to which they were to share with others. Now at the end of the days, when the king had said that they would be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them before Nebuchadnezzar. It was time for their final exam. And this is what took place. Then the king interviewed them. And among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they served before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in his realm. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. He served as a slave in public service before the king. He served 60+ years. 60+ years. Daniel trusted in God, and he acted in humility, wanting to obey God, wanting clean food, didn't want conflict, and didn't want to be in your face, and just said, please test us. And God answered that prayer. God answered that prayer. Daniel's friends, we were not done with them, Daniel 3. For some reason, Daniel was not available during this opportunity of idolatry. But Daniel's friends were caught up with Nebuchadnezzar's musical narcissism. They trusted God. They trusted God as well. Daniel 3, verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits, and he set it in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And the king sent word to gather together the satraps and the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which the king set up. Hey, everybody, in town. So I don't know where Daniel was, because Daniel would not have accepted this demand for idolatrous worship. So all these guys gathered together, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Verse 4, then a herald cried aloud, to you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, just an orchestra, I'll just say that, in symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. I mean, this is pure narcissism in worshiping the God, his God, small g. And whoever does not fall down shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fire, fiery furnace. So at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the orchestra, all the people, nations and languages, fell down and worshipped the gold image which the king Nebuchadnezzar set up. But, therefore, at the time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews, and they spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the orchestra fall down on their face and worship the gold image. And whoever does not is thrown into a fiery furnace. Well, there are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They don't fear you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. They have trust in God, the real God. Not this fake God. Well, Nebuchadnezzar was a little miffed. No, it says he went into a rage and fury and gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego so that they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, is it true that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Don't answer. Now, listen, if you're ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, the orchestra, and you fall down and worship the image that I have made, good. But if you do not, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God, small g, who will deliver you from my hands? They serve the living God, big G. And they had trust in God. Their experiences brought them to a position where It doesn't matter what the king who holds life and death in his hands has to say. God comes first. Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. There's no need to go through the test. You don't need to run the orchestra. If that is the case, our God, big G, capital G, whom we serve, is able to deliver us up from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us from your hand. They understood God's choice, though. They understood not everything goes according to what they wanted. Verse 18, but if not, if God had something else in mind, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. Well, Nebuchadnezzar understood and said, okay, go about your business. No, he lost his mind. He was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. It's going to be hot, folks. I'm going to fry you. And it was so hot that when they opened the door, when the guards opened the door, you had what is known as a backdraft. And it came down and consumed the guards. And they flung them in there. These men went bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Because the king's command was urgent and the furnace was exceedingly hot, the flame of fire killed those who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. When they opened the door, you had a backdraft. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished. He had just thrown these guys into the fiery furnace, and he could see down in there. He was astonished, and he rose up in haste and spoke to his counselors. Did we not cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? And they said, true, O king. We counted three in. There, we threw them in. Look, he answered, I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. He was starting to remember Daniel dealing with dreams. Starting to remember, Daniel and his friends were special. Big change came over Nebuchadnezzar because these men had trust in God. Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery and spoke, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, you guys, servants of the Most High God, come out. You can come out here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the midst of the fire. And all these satraps and administrators and governors saw that they had no damage to them. There was no smell to their clothes. They saw these men on whose bodies the fire had no power. The hair on their head was not singed, nor was their garments affected. And the smell of fire was not on them. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants, who trusted in him. And they have frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own god. When we read stories like that, where are we in our trust with God? Where are we? Therefore, I will make a decree that any people, nation, language, which speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall have a hard time with me. Let's just say it'll be a hard time. Because there is no other God who can deliver like this. There is no other God who can deliver like this. He had forgotten Daniel in the dreams. His narcissism required that everybody fall down to his golden image that he made and should worship his God. And he found out that God, the God whom we serve, the God whom we are to have a relationship with, is a God who rescues and intervenes and helps. That's very interesting that the story of Daniel doesn't end there. But Daniel keeps these stories in mind. He collects these stories. He understands through his own experiences to trust God, sharing the stories that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had, and it encourages him. Well, Daniel wasn't done serving civil authorities. He had served Nebuchadnezzar through two dreams. He served Belshazzar, the writing of the wall, and he was about 70 years old at the time. And then there was Darius. Daniel 6. Darius comes along. And Daniel now is promoted to governorship. He's a governor, one of three governors. Daniel 6, verse 1. It pleased Darius. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom. And over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one. He was a man to be trusted. He was a man filled with wisdom and understanding. A capable man who loved serving people and caring for people. He was one of three governors, and of these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps, it's a governor or a prince over a province, in case I didn't mention that before, that's what a satrap is, that the satraps might give account to them, so that the king would suffer no loss. These satraps, these princes of or governors of provinces, had to report to the governors. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because his excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. Well, this didn't sit well with everybody else. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful. Nor was there any error or fault in him. He's a man who trusted God and he did his job well. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." They understood that Daniel trusted God. And that's the only way they could get to him. Actually, very clever if you think about it. So these governors and satraps, verse 6, thronged before the king and said thus to him, "King Darius, live forever." Boy, you can smell I just lost a word. That's okay. I'll find it later. These guys were coming up to the king and saying, let's smooze you, kingo. All the governors and the king of the kingdom and the administrators and satraps, counselors, advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god, small g, or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into a den of lions. we're doing this for your glory, O king. There's only one man that's going to fall on this one. "Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter." Which is always why they took their time making decisions, because once they made it, nobody changed it. "Therefore, Darius," he liked the idea. Yeah, nobody can appeal to a god or a man except to me. I like that. So King Darius signed the written decree. Now, verse 10. "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed," he knew the writing was signed. He knew this was a death sentence. He understood that on his daily basis of having trusted God, what he did on a daily basis was now in violation of the king's decree. "When he knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room with his window open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God," big G, as was his custom since early days. This was his way of life. Three times a day he would pray to God. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying. Why would these guys all of a sudden show up at the time he was praying? It's a setup, folks. They wanted him gone. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. And they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. Have you not signed this decree? You could almost imagine the next day. Hey, king, didn't you do this? Didn't you say don't do this? And if you did that, off you go to the lions. And the king said, this is true. So they answered, verse 13, and said to before the king, that Daniel, whom is one of the captives of Judah, does not show due regard to you, O king, for the decree that you have signed, but makes petition three times a day. And the king finally saw these guys for what they were. And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men approached the king and said to the king, you know, king, that it is the law of the Medes and Persians that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed. Kind of like going to Congress and trying to figure out how to get around a law that was made impervious, yet you can't go around a law. Verse 16, so the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. It was kind of more out of hope. But understand something. Darius understood Daniel's trust in God. It was an example to Darius that Daniel had trust in God. And now the king was hoping that Daniel's God would intervene. Your God, whom you can serve continually, he will deliver you. Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signets of his lords, that he purposed that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. I mean, he was locked in. Can't get out of it. Verse 18. Now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. And no musicians were brought to him, and his sleep went from him. He was really upset with himself, with all those administrators, for letting Daniel be in his position. Then the king, verse 19, arose very early in the morning, and he went in haste. He rushed to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice, O Daniel! The king spoke, saying to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? Please tell me yes. King Darius was learning to trust in God, in Daniel's God. Verse 21, then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, so they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. Now the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatsoever was found on him, because he believed in his God. He trusted in his God. We have in our individual lives stories like this. Each of us has stories that we have stored up in our memories. We have gone through experiences that help us trust in our God. Regardless of what we're going through, we learn to trust God. Seeing and hearing your stories helps me. Sharing my stories helps you. That God does intervene. He is our God. He is our God. What is my list? My list. Yeah, he is our guide, protector, sustainer, healer. He is our hope and salvation. And we trust him to be God. We trust him to be our God. The stories of trials and troubles, of rescue and protection, of instruction, they were written for us to learn to trust God. And that we should share these stories with our family and our children so that we all develop a relationship with God, learning to trust him in all things. to trust God as our provider and our protector. Give us this day our daily bread. We go back to the manna thing. It's not just teaching about the Sabbath. It's teaching that we trust God on a daily basis. We trust that by studying God's word, by reading the stories and reminding ourselves of what our forefathers went through and how similar our experiences are. And maybe not the examples of how similar the experience were. I don't think any of us are going to be thrown into a lion's den. But the lesson we learn is similar. That we learn to trust God. We learn that God will act and react the same. He never lies and he never changes. And we could trust him that how he acted back here, he will act for us today with that same care and concern. We should learn the lessons of trust from God's word and to put trust in the forefront, trusting God in the forefront of our thinking. Whatever we get into, God should be there in front of us. And we should share these stories with our families of God, of how God has worked in our lives, being our protector, being our sustainer and our help. There are times that God allows us to experience very difficult trials so that we learn to trust him. We trust his wisdom and we trust his judgment. We trust him in the future. We trust that there is a future. He's given us eternity in our heart to know that there is a tomorrow. To remind ourselves often that his thoughts are not our thoughts, that his thoughts are so much higher than our thoughts, Isaiah 55. Sometimes the answer we get is just good enough for the day, so that, like manna, we look to God's intervention for the next day. There are times God won't remove a trial completely, but allows us to grow in the rescue, to grow in trust, to learn daily to ask and trust for his answers. Hope that was helpful.